You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
There's that sound. The sound of the start of yet another edition of the Roto Experts in the Morning. I'm Mike Blewett. I'm going to be here along with George Kurtz for the next 2 hours on here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Happy to kick off your Sunday, and thank you for joining us. George, to get right into it, we had some excellent pitching performances yesterday, highlighted by one fantasy star, Corey Kluber, who continues a red-hot June. He picks up 13 strikeouts yesterday. Unfortunately, a couple of unearned runs on his part and the bullpen not doing their job, namely Cody Allen in a non-save situation. He takes the loss there at Kluber, but it has just been dazzling in the month of June. 52 strikeouts on the month leads the AL.
Mike, good morning, Mike. How are you, Mike?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm feeling
right
fired
to the
up.
Show.
I'm ready
no
to go.
No beating around the bush at all.
No way. No messing around in this opening four-minute segment. I want to get right to Corey Kluber's brilliance.
Yeah, Corey Kluber almost pitches like the baseball is a wiffle ball. He has more movement on his pitches as a starting pitcher than almost anybody I've seen. At least it seems that way. The way he's able to make that ball dance up there. He's pretty close to unhittable right now, especially on a regular base. Almost like you have to guess. You guess right now, you might get lucky. If not, you're going down. So Kluber's looked great this week, coming back off the DL. Fantastic for Kluber fans, Kluber owners, and great for Indian fans. Allen did. We talked about it yesterday. It's an interesting situation, what's going on there with Cleveland. You know, Francona mentions he wants to get Miller more rest. He pitched him two innings the other day. Allen comes in a non-save situation yesterday. Just go off paternity leave. Maybe he wasn't getting any sleep. Okay, maybe that's what's going on there with Cody Allen. I'm not all that worried as far as Allen's concerned, as far as his pitching's concerned. I am a little concerned about, you know, what his role is right now, what Miller's role is. You know, I think we'd like more definition here.
Yeah, it's not like Allen got bombed yesterday. He gave up one run, so it's not something that you can freak out about. It was a Brian Dozier homer, his 13th of the year. So as George said, that's really the most important part of what we focus on. We got Miller in closer role, and Allen's going to sit up for him, but is this just a temporary thing? It was put out to us that he wanted to give Miller some rest, which is an odd way to go about saying that and changing those roles, as we discussed yesterday. But the bottom line is Kluber is on fire this month. He is 52 strikeouts to 6 walks. Just a bunch of crazy numbers. His 11.6 K to 9 ratio, 35 innings this month. The best part about all the news, George, is specifically what you said, him coming off the DL. You're always weary, whether it's a major or minor injury. You're always weary of what can happen when these guys come off the DL, and Kluber hasn't missed a beat.
Absolutely. Kluber is a must-start game day in, day out. Top 5 starting pitcher in Major League Baseball.
No doubt about it. So we're going to talk about some other major starting pitchers in baseball. Who's the first guy to 11 wins in Major League Baseball? We'll tell you when we come back after the break. Mike and George back after this. Back on the Roto Experts in the Morning, Mike and George. Here until 10 o'clock, we got Tony Cicada coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, about 9:40. That'll happen. We'll talk some DFS. Maybe a little bit of golf DFS, but some MLB DFS there. If you want to hit us up on Twitter today, feel free. People are firing stuff at the show to get started, talking football, talking baseball. We'll focus on baseball in the first hour, football in the second hour, Tony's DFS segment notwithstanding. So Fantasy Sports Radio, hit us up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. I'm at Mike Blewett. George is at George Kurtz. And if you wanted to give us a call to ask us anything, feel free. 844-843-6879. That's 84-FNTSY. So, George, just to clean up that Indians Twins matchup, Dozier does have a key homer there to sort of give him the win.
there for Minnesota. That was in the eighth inning. They tack on an insurance run in the ninth. Not too much offense there, but Jose Ramirez did hit his 12th homer of the year. Beyond that, Robbie Grossman had a hit in an RBI. Robbie Grossman was sort of an asset, becoming a fantasy asset about a month ago, George, but he's really declined quite a bit here in the last month, I've noticed. He was a guy that had a little bit of buzz going. Like, do you pick up Robbie Grossman in deeper leagues? Can you pick him up? Can he be an asset for you? But really, he's tailed off quite a bit despite hitting third in the Twins lineup.
Yeah, he was the definition of a guy. He was just riding while he was hot. He was never going to last long term. I think we all knew that. I can remember barely thinking about him, and I certainly haven't thought about him in a while. You mentioned deep league, AL only, deep in the 12 teams, probably 14, 16 teams. Maybe you'd be interested then. Other than that, he's much better off just left alone.
Yes. So, George, moving on to another game. Who was the first guy in Major League Baseball to pick up his 11th win?
Oh, I should know this. I actually heard this stat somewhere along the line yesterday. And it's not
it
someone we
expect.
Oh, KC. What's his name?
Yep.
Vargas.
Yep. Yeah, Jason Vargas. The KC goes back above 500, 37 and 36 on the season. Are they sellers? I think not, George. They are making a case right now. And considering what we just talked about, Twins and Indians, despite the fact that people think the Indians are going to run away with it, they're 39 and 34. The Twins have now beat them for the second day in a row. They're 38 and 34, a half game out. KC right on their heels at 37 and 36. So this is still a race in this division.
Absolutely. We talked about this yesterday. I don't think KC is selling out anymore, which is really going to annoy quite a few teams around baseball who might have needed a Hosmer for first base.
Yeah.
You know, might have needed that top-notch closer in Herrera. I still wonder if they deal Herrera. I don't know. You wonder how much they think that a closer is necessary, a top-notch closer, especially if they can bring back good young talent. You know, Lorenzo Cain could have brought back a nice piece, or pieces, for that matter. So it's interesting for KC, but I don't see how you can trade out, right? Not right now, not with the way you're playing, not the way that division's lining up. I still think Cleveland in the end might run away with it, but they're not playing well enough now to get it done. You know, they may have to make some deals as well here. I think my biggest worry, Mike, is when you think about it, Major League Baseball was, KC almost needs to trade, because they're going to lose these guys anyway. You know, there's very little chance. They certainly can't sign all three long term. You know, maybe
no doubt
they can get Hosmer done, but that's, I think he's a Boris client. That's going to cost a pretty penny, and I just don't know if I have my doubts if they can afford it.
The problem is, I was reading earlier this week, they have five guys coming up for free agency, and they'll have to put out qualifying offers for all of them. They certainly couldn't afford it. Now, the qualifying offers are rarely accepted, although we've seen a couple of instances in recent years where that has happened, but in the instance where all five guys accepted a qualifying offer, $85 million it adds up to, they obviously can't afford that. Now, clearly guys like Hosmer are going to see longer term deals. I think the one thing you said about closer is the most apt when it comes to this, because they can wait it out. They can wait another 4 weeks, take phone calls, and just not make a deal, right, on guys like Hosmer, Moustakas, whomever you want to put out there as far as Kane. But regarding Herrera, do you really need Herrera there if you can get some pieces back when you can put Soria in that role and at least feel comfortable with it? Probably you can get rid of Herrera.
That's where I was going with that. Generally, yeah. I don't want to say a closer is a luxury, or that's not necessary, but it's not the most important position. Fantasy, yeah, it's one of five. But, you know, as far as the Major League Baseball team is concerned, you mentioned they have Soria, and a guy who's done the role in the past before injury. Yeah, he's not Herrera. Yeah, he's nowhere near as good. It would certainly weaken your bullpen, but what does Herrera bring back? You know, can you get back, you know, 75% of what the Yankees got back for Chapman and do a Miller trade last year? If so,
they would take that right now if they could get 75%
right
of that.
Don't you have to do that deal then? I mean, don't you have to if you're Casey for
yes.
a closer? I understand he's a very good closer, but he's not great. He's not he's not the next Mariano Rivera. So I think Casey, I would want to be trading more the GM there, because I think he's got some very tough choices, and no matter what he does, he'll have to explain it to the fans. You know, if he trades out, why are you trading out? We're only a couple games out of first place, or whatever they are in a month. You know, if he trades in, how can you do this? We're going to lose all these guys. It's going to be terrible now for 5 years. If he does nothing, that doesn't look good either. So he's in a very tough spot.
Yeah, they're currently only really one game out right now, or two games out right now. So Let me take one more counterpoint. I don't want to beat the KC thing to death, but it's an interesting topic because of what we've been talking. I mean, it really has changed, right? In the last month, you and I and everybody else, frankly, on this network is talking about, well, when is KC going to sell out? They have all these guys that we know they can't sign. When are they going to ditch? But now they've played well because Hosmer's played well and Kane has played well. And they're obviously getting great pitching out of a guy like Jason Vargas, which if you could explain it to me, how the guy's 34 and now he's the best, one of the best pitchers in the American League, feel free to explain it to me. But let me take the counterpoint to this. They're going to blow this thing up. It's going to be a while before it comes back together for them. You know, they have to make the runs, as you said. They kind of have to sell and rebuild. Can you take the one last shot here while they're playing well, while they're in the mix? Not just for fans' sake, but for the fact of, like, it might be a while before we have a good enough team to compete and make the playoffs and win that playoff game, and then anything can happen. How about that? Just taking one last shot with the group that you have.
Well, the problem is then you lose those guys for free.
That's right.
And that puts you further behind now. Now your next shot might not be until 2025, for all we know. By the time you build up some of these youngsters again, it's the only problem there is at Major League Baseball. You know, Tampa has this problem where to really be good, you need a whole bunch of your youngsters to come together at the same time and get good at the same time, because you know you're not going to make that big free agent acquisition. That's not going to happen. Sure, you might make an acquisition at the trade deadline for a guy who doesn't have term or not major term anyway, but you're not going to make that big free agent acquisition to help your team. So if, let's say they are by not doing anything. You know, let's say they don't trade these guys away, and then they lose. Herrera goes, Hosmer goes. I think Kane still has one more year. But so they go, what are you replacing those guys with? And that's the issue. You probably don't have easily ready-made replacements in the minors. They don't, actually. And even if you do, you have no idea if these guys are going to hit or not or play well or not. So this could take, I think I said 2025, that's 8 years. They should be able to compete before that. But we've seen the Royals before that, before they came back to relevance 2-3 years ago. When was the last time they were?
It was a 20-year respite from them being any good at all.
So you almost have to be disciplined here. If you don't think you have a legitimate chance to win the World Series or get to the playoffs, whatever your goal is, you know, don't you owe it to your organization to do what you have to do? Now, the owner may tell you, hey, we're a game out of first place. I want to go for it this year. Or I don't want to trade out. I want to compete this year. I'll eat it for the next 5 years. He may tell you that. And you have to follow your own. He's the boss. But you have to know deep inside also. And 2 years from now, when we're bad, he's going to fire me, even though he said this. And even though I warned him not to, he's going to fire me because he's going to be upset that we're playing so badly. You know, owners tend to think about the here and now, not 3-4 years down the line.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, you don't want to be Dayton Moore, because the day that he has to trade Eric Hosmer is just going to be a bad day. It's just is, you know, any way you look at it. Fans are going to be bummed. He's going to be bummed, but they know they can't keep him. Hosmer was offered a deal that he didn't take, so he knows he's going out there to the highest bidder. So it is what it is. We'll keep track of it. I do think the Royals are kind of an interesting case right now. It's made it harder for him. He could have been selling in a week, and now he's just got to wait until he gets bowled over by some offers or ditch at the last minute. Just to wrap up this game quickly, Jason Vargas, 7 innings, 2 earned runs, 11-3 on the season. Marco Estrada pitched well yesterday in a loss, 7 innings and 3 earned runs. Hosmer with a homer, Tulowitzki with a homer. Not a ton of offense, but Jason Vargas moves to 11-3. Kelvin Herrera picks up his 18th save. We'll come back. We'll talk about the next guy that got 11 wins in Major League Baseball. Mike and George back after this. Back, rocking out. On this Sunday morning, thank you for joining us. It's Mike and George, Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, talking a little bit of baseball. We've got a nice KC segment. All those Kansas City fans out there that are nervous. We probably made them even more nervous.
What East Coast Pie is here.
Yeah.
My wife just got home and she's making ribs.
Wow. That's an early time of day to be making ribs, and probably very distracting for you because it is that type of day in the New York area. It's grilling time and all that kind of good stuff. That was the first thing I thought when I woke up. I was like, you know what? I got to get on the barbecue today and make something happen. So good stuff. So I was watching a little bit last night. Kershaw was coming up, and, you know, I always try to make a point of sitting down and watching his games specifically, just because I don't want to be the guy, the fan, that took it for granted. You know what I mean? That he was around. He's one of the best pitchers of all time. And it's like, I know he's going to go out there and dominate. Like, I want to watch. I want to see how good he is. You and I both love baseball. But specifically with Kershaw, like, I make a point, if he's going to be on, I want to sit down and watch. And I did that last night. So while he didn't last long into the game, he was his dominant self. He threw 103 pitches, 73 for strikes. He only goes six innings, but picks up his 11th win of the season. One walk, four hits, eight Ks, George.
Yeah, sort of a ho-hum outing, right? You imagine six innings, eight Ks, no runs. He owns the Rockies, especially at Dodger Stadium. So no shock there. The Rockies did work. I mean, they had runners on base a couple of times, couldn't get the big hit. But, well, I guess the good news is there was some concern about Kershaw a couple starts ago. He wasn't striking out a lot of batters. You know, a few of us noticed that. But all signs look green now. They look go. He looks great. You know, so what are you going to do? It's Kershaw. It's Kershaw. You're sort of right, Mike. We do get spoiled sometimes by the greatness that we witness from day one here. So we shouldn't take it for advantage. Go out and watch a Kershaw start.
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of people out there, too, would declare themselves baseball fans and know how good he is. But, look, it doesn't last forever. The guy's not going to be pitching until he's 45. So while he may have some plenty of good years in him, we already know he had a significant back injury. He's not even 30 yet, which is crazy. But ultimately, I do make a point of doing that. Now, on the flip side, Tyler Chatwood, a guy that we've had some success with earlier this year, had quite a rough outing last night, George. He only goes 3 1/3, 88 pitches, only 41 of those for strikes. He walked eight guys and giving up four runs.
Yeah, it's not going to get the job done, right? You got to get the ball over the plate here. I think sometimes, you know, I think pitchers want to be too fine, you know, and that's sort of where the fine line is, right? Not only do you have to have control, you have to have control within the zone. And what I mean about that, you just can't throw the ball down the middle. Yeah, you're throwing strikes, but it's going to get wrecked all over the place. So you're trying to hit quarters, but sometimes we've seen pitchers like this forever that are so afraid to throw strikes. They try and nibble. And if you're not getting the call from the umpire, you know, if the 16-inch plate is actually a 16-inch plate, then guess what? You're not going to get the pitch that's 2 inches off the zone, and you're going to have to come in, and then you're afraid of getting wrecked. You have to be too fine. You know, sort of reminds me of Tom Glavin some years ago, where he complained about when Questech was first introduced, because it's like the first thing I thought about me was what? So now you're upset that the home plate is actually home plate? You're not going to get 2 inches outside, 2 inches inside? You know, deal with it. You know, so I think pitchers are one thing I like about the fact that the National League pitchers hit is that they sort of get to realize how hard it is to hit. You can't be afraid to throw strikes all the time. The problem is you have to throw good strikes. I think that was the problem last night. I think he was afraid of throwing good strikes or strikes over the middle. He was afraid of getting hit, trying to be too fine, and that doesn't work out for you either. Trust your stuff.
Yeah. I think we see that a lot with certain pitchers. It was, you know, just a guy that always pops into my head when this type of topic comes up, guys that are just kind of afraid to get hit. I always felt like that was Phil Hughes' issue in New York and continued to be his issue throughout his career. He had amazing stuff at times and could be unhittable, but I felt like he was always trying to be too fine. He worked really deep into counts, and he was just afraid to let guys hit it and let his fielders do their job. And ultimately, I always felt like that was why his career ultimately wasn't what it was. And I think we just saw evidence of that last night with Tyler Chatwood. So, you know, the Dodgers picked up 10 walks, but only six hits. So there's not a lot of superstars fantasy-wise last night. Jock Peterson does hit his sixth homer of the year, but that's really about it. Yasmani Grandal picked up a couple of hits, just tons of walks, George. Even Kershaw picked up an RBI on a bases-loaded walk.
I didn't realize they got 10 walks in the game, man. And I was watching that game. That's horrendous. I mean, wow. Yeah. Listen, if you call it just one of those nights, that's the way I would look at it. Yeah. Just one of those nights. I'm actually more surprised, Mike, that it wasn't in Colorado. You know, these 10 walks in Colorado, I sort of get it. You know, you're afraid of Coors Field. Dodger Stadium, big ballpark. Throw the ball over the plate.
Yeah, totally agree. So they'll go back for the they'll play again today out in L.A., and we'll see what happens there. Moving on, another guy that we're sort of tracking pretty well, George, because he's coming off the DL, and that's Lance McCullers comes back. He only throws five innings last night, but he had eight strikeouts in those five innings and picks up his seventh win of the season against the Mariners.
Yeah, I'm on board here. You know, I wasn't all that worried about McCullers going on the DL. I think Houston's going to might do this a couple of times, mainly because they have such a big lead that what are they worried about? You know, they can afford to do this, give a pitcher a 2-3 week break. You know, I wonder what's sitting with Keuchel. Now, I'm not saying he's not hurt. I'm sure he is. But I wonder if this is the if this is a close, you know, they're only ahead by a game or two, if maybe Keuchel doesn't go on the DL, you know, because they don't want him to miss starts. But when McCullers now Keuchel, they can afford to do this. Because it doesn't matter. They're going to win this division. Their next important game is not until October. So they can afford to play it smart here. Make sure these guys have enough rest here. I think it's what maybe more true with McCullers, who's had a history of not being able to go deep into seasons, of getting hurt more than Keuchel. But it's good to see him back, pitch five innings. They're going to be very cautious with their starters, as well they should be, as the regular season doesn't mean much for them anymore.
I mean, they're 51-25. They're 12.5 up on the Mariners, who they played yesterday, who are just at 39-38. We expect the Mariners to probably be playing better for the rest of the season, but again, not going to be challenged. This thing is a runaway. The only other teams whose records are actually approaching theirs in all of Major League Baseball are actually the Dodgers, whom we just spoke about, and the Rockies and Diamondbacks sort of right behind them. Which is, you know, still kind of amazing that we have three of those teams in the NL West that are playing as well as they're playing. So moving on in that game, George Springer, a couple of hits, a couple of runs scored. Josh Reddick hits a homer yesterday, two-run homer. Beyond that, 9 hits total for the Mariners, kind of spread around the Brian McCann has a hit with 3 RBIs. On the Mariners side of things, Nelson Cruz, a couple of hits. John Segura a hit, Robbie Cano a hit, and a RBI. So not tons of runs scored there in the 5-2 game, but that being said, that's your story for that game. On the Mariners side of things, he pitched there. That was Gaviglio. He goes 6 innings, 2 earned runs, 3 walks, 6 hits. So not much there. He takes the loss. George, you and I talk about on a regular basis, you know, what are the Yankees going to do here? Are they going to add an arm? Well, maybe they'll backfill it with some guys, get some starts out of somebody like Luis Sessa. Well, Luis Sessa goes 5 innings yesterday, 3 runs scored, 2 walks. He had 8 strikeouts, but he takes the loss in an 8-1 victory for the Rangers. Bebens Dirks moves to 3-0 on the season, 7 innings pitched, only 1 run given up. So a really nice outing from him. As far as the pitching is concerned here, you know, Sess is okay. He only goes to 5 innings. What's crazy is that Tyler Clippard, granted, it's not a huge fantasy asset, but Tyler Clippard has struggled mightily, and Girardi's tried to get him back on track. So as much as we talk about the Yankees pitching and adding a starter and the bullpen should be fine, one of their key sort of setup men in Tyler Clippard has been awful, and he gave up 4 runs yesterday in a very low leverage 9th inning.
Yeah, Clippard looks terrible. I mean, there's just no other way around it. He looks awful, and he's been looked awful most of the season. He's been getting hit more than in April, maybe half in May. He just wasn't getting hit. He was getting hit right at people, right at fielders. That's not happening anymore. These guys are wrecking the ball off him. We're not talking about little bleeders here, little dunks that are falling in. We're talking about balls going over the wall or off the wall or up the gap. So he's got some issues right now that he'll have to work through. I was surprised last year that Cashman wanted to acquire him from Arizona in the deal, you know, and then re-signed him. I didn't think that made a lot of sense. You know, Clippard is an average reliever at this point in his career. At one point, he may have been a little above average, but he was never dominant. You know, so I was surprised that Cashman liked him so much. He is a former Yankee farmhand. Maybe he had some love there because of that, whatever it might be. So Clippard needs to get things worked out. The Yankees have some problems. They're not hitting at all right now. They're not playing very good defense right now either. They have issues at first base. They released Chris Carter. Tavon Austin mentioned yesterday, unless you're in an AL only league or a Tavon, 14-16 team league.
Damn, Tavon. Saturday night.
I'm up the football, man. Up the football.
I know. I get it.
Like I said, he has some issues there, so that's not really that's gonna be a problem. Tyler Austin struck out 3 times yesterday. At least he'll catch the ball at first base, so I guess that's some good news. But like I said, the Yankees have some problems right now. Third base is an issue. Why aren't the Yankees putting Chase Headley on the DL? He's gonna miss 3-4 days anyway. He sucks. Put him on the DL. Call somebody up here. Why are you playing with a short bench?
It's a good question. I know we were talking yesterday about how he didn't pinch hit with Chris Carter up there Friday night. Chris Carter strikes out in a big situation and then gets DFA'd basically the next morning. Mason Williams was sitting there. He didn't pinch hit. Technically, Headley was there. But as he stated, he's injured. We know he's going to be out for a few days. What's the point of holding that spot? Just get him out of there and bring somebody else in that can actually contribute. Because Headley, frankly, even when he's healthy, isn't contributing.
Like, you're dying to get Headley back in the lineup here. It makes exactly. makes no sense to me.
Yeah, so.
Hell, maybe a couple of days off will do well for him.
Yeah, agreed. Elvis Andrus, a couple of hits yesterday in this game. A couple of RBIs. Carlos Gomez, his 10th hit of the home run of the season. Chirinos, his 10th home run of the season. DeShield scored a couple of runs. Shin-Soo Choo hit a couple of RBIs. Aaron Judge hit his 26th homer. Guy makes it look a little too easy. Cooled off a little bit on batting average, but he's still tied for the league lead in RBIs and leads the league in homers. So, George, if everybody could hit homers like this, you know, it'd be a lot of fun for fantasy owners. But he's a superstar. We'll talk more about baseball when we come back. Mike and George after this.
Oh, I found it.
Back on the Roto Experts in the Morning, Mike and George talking baseball for this hour. And we're going to talk football in the second hour as we get to that time of year. I always feel like July 1 is that kind of turning of the page for some fantasy owners. Although I implore you to stay with it. Stay in the mix in your baseball leagues. I can tell you personally that I was struggling badly in my league a couple of weeks ago, and it's just it's turned around to some extent. In fact, I'm going to check my standings right now to tell you where I am after yesterday. I had a whole bunch of family parties yesterday, so I can't say I did the best job of putting in my best lineup because I have daily lineup changes, but I'm in fourth place, George. My hitting's legit. I can't get any freaking wins, though. That's really my problem, and those are not an easy thing to kind of pick up mid-season. I'm just going to have a hard time, I think, in that category all season. But there was like a 30-point deficit between myself and the first-place guy, and now it's down to 15. So that happened in really the last month or so. So, you know, things can turn around. A couple of injuries here and there. That guy had Mike Trout. Things have turned around for me. So I implore all of you owners to stick with us and go to the Exclusive Edge in-season package for MLB for rotoexperts.com. You're going to find rankings and in-depth statistical analysis and who to pick up on your waiver wires. We're going to talk about George's who's hot or who's not in just a moment. But I implore you to go there and enter promo code FREERADIO for a special discount. We do have also the NFL draft package now available. We're going to get into that in the second hour. George and I both contributed to that. We'll talk a little bit about some articles in there and some perspective on fantasy football for the 2017 season. So please go there, enter promo code DAD. I believe it's still available for a special discount. So, excuse me. So, one game I'll talk about before we get to George's article, because I'd be remiss if I blew by a game in which there were 18 runs scored by the Nationals, George. You said many times, man, the Reds are going to stink this season. And they proved you wrong for about 7 weeks. Now they're 30-43. And they gave up 18 runs to the Nationals yesterday. This guy gets a hit, and you get a hit, and you get a hit, and you get a hit. Trey Turner, 5-for-5, 4-run scorer, and a couple of ribbies to highlight the onslaught yesterday from the Nats, George.
Yeah, it's funny. You mentioned 18 runs, 19 hits. Yeah, Bryce Harper only had one little itty-bitty single.
And 3 Ks to go with it.
Right, I can see it. Right, if you're at points, like, he's actually a negative yesterday. Right, he's gonna be a -2. I can see people flipping out if you had Bryce Harper yesterday. Because isn't that always the worst thing, Mike? You know, if you didn't watch the game, you know, you're just checking box scores later that night. You know, you're on whatever your favorite site is. You look, 18 runs. Must have had a big day for my guy. What? All I see is zeros here. He had one hit, I'm a negative. He had 18 runs, and I'm a negative. This would flip me out. You want to know what my anger was about this game? What do you think I was angry about this game, Mike? You should know this.
Well, Joe Ross actually had a
game. There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. I cannot get this guy right to save my life.
Oh, here. You benched him.
Benched him. Of course I benched him. He was horrible. Horrible. Yeah. Awful. Oh. And it was only a one-start week. And Cincinnati has been hitting pretty well. And, of course, he pitches. There's I don't know if there's a player I want to strangle more than Joe Ross. Now, Gerrit Cole's been on. I've been wanting to kill him too, but
he
it was a two-star week
too.
This week, so I started. It was two-star weeks, so I started him, so I got both those wins this week. He looks like he's finally turned it around. But Joe Ross, man, just can't get it right. No matter what I do, I bench him, he pitches great. I start him, he pitches terrible. He's trolling me. That's the only way I can look. He's just trolling me.
Yeah, so Joe Ross actually throws 7 innings yesterday, 6 hits, 1 run, 5 strikeouts. Really nice outing. He moves to 4-3 on the season. Homer Bailey, on the flip side, didn't fare so well. Goes 1 2/3, gives up 8 earned. Homer Bailey, just not what you're looking for. His ERA currently on the season, George, 43.2.
That's probably not good.
Yeah, lack of work, obviously, but still, he got bombed yesterday. Just a really rough outing. Bonilla comes in for 3 1/3. He gives up 5 runs. Wood gives up 4 runs. But down the list, Trey Turner, 5 for 5, 4 runs, 2 RBIs. Michael Taylor, 2 homers yesterday, his 9th and 10th on the season. Daniel Murphy, 1 hit, 4 RBIs yesterday with the runs scored. Ryan Zimmerman, for those of you that are non-believers and thought he might cool off, has another day yesterday. 2 for 3, 2 runs scored, 2 RBIs. Matt Wieters, 2 for 5, 2 RBIs. Taylor with 3 RBIs on those 2 homers and 4 runs scored. So, you know, that's what you want. But as you said, if you were out yesterday and you saw that they put up 18 runs and you're a Bryce Harper owner, you're like, sweet. I cashed in, and it didn't happen. So sorry to focus on the negative, but that was the deal yesterday there. Scooter Jeanette, a couple of hits. Hamilton, a couple of hits. But down the line, they only picked up 3 runs. So there you go. Joe Ross frustrating George. Bryce Harper frustrating other owners as well. So talking a little bit about George's Who's Not, Who's Hot article, George, guy that I waited on for a really long time is Ryan Haniger. 12 for 43, 2 homers and 5 RBIs since coming off the DL.
Yeah, I wonder if he's a guy out there you could go out and grab. Maybe he's with all the DL moves, could have been put on the waiver wire. He's back now. He hasn't really hit the ground running, I would say, but he hasn't been in a massive slump either. I think this kid is a player. I think he will get better as the season moves along here. I think he is over the injury, which is the most important thing. So he's somebody I would like to go out and acquire.
I said Ryan Haniger, by the way. It's Mitch Haniger. So
yeah, I was letting you go there. See, I was going to call you out on it.
I know it says Ryan on the thing.
Tavon Austin.
So yeah, I know it says Ryan on the thing that I'm reading, and you wrote the thing that I'm reading. So we're both culpable here. I know I saw a stat earlier this week. And it was, I can't remember the writer. He's like, here's your update on crummy ex-Mariner first baseman. And he had Logan Morrison stats, and he had Justin Smoke stats. And I'll bring it up now because I literally saved it in order to read that today. Let me see if I can find it. There it is. Well, anyway, talk about Logan Morrison since you have him on your Who's Hot list.
That's funny. That's someone who seems to be a little angry Mariner fan there. Logan Morrison, I don't think we saw this coming, the power. It's the most home runs he's hit in quite a while. He's going to be doing it in a ballpark that's known as a very good hitter's ballpark, right? Tampa Bay, or probably outside of Oakland, maybe the worst ballpark in the majors, certainly close to it. He's already got 22 home runs. His career high was 23 set in 2011, certainly going to blow by that. The average, it's not killing you. It's not helping you. But 252 is not truly hurting you either. You should be able to survive here. Now, I don't think he's going to hit 50 home runs, which is about what he's on pace for, give or take. I think that number will come down here. If I could trade him, Mike, I would trade him. If someone needs the power, I'd want to move on here and maybe find something else. Because I said, I don't think the power is sustainable. But I don't think he's going to become an all or nothing guy either. So I don't think he's going to be, hit a home run, do a Joey Gallo, about 170 the rest of the season. But still, I'd be looking to sell high here while I can to a team that needs power.
Yeah, so the article was written, forgive me if the stats are slightly off, George updated you on a couple, but here's your update on crummy ex-Mariners first baseman, Logan Morrison, 252, 353, 572 slash with 22 homers, 47 RBIs. Numbers are a little higher than that now. Justin Smoke, 292, 352, 584, 19 homers, 45 RBIs. So both former crummy Mariners first baseman have come into their own this year and are both having big seasons. But as we move on, Jonathan Scope from the Baltimore Orioles. A few weeks ago in your home league, you said, George, you had a decision to make when Ian Kinsler landed on the DL. You could have taken Devin Travis, Dustin Pedroia, or Scope. You made the wrong decision. At that time, he was batting in the bottom third of the lineup, having a solid but not spectacular season. Over his past 30 games, he has done what Manny Machado owners have been waiting for. 9 homers, 26 ribbies, and batting .324.
Yeah, that decision didn't work out well for me. I believe I took Pedroia.
Oh,
I think I took Pedroia. I took Kinsler was only going to be out a week, so I kept looking at the schedule, and I think Fenway played at home that week. So that was pretty much the deciding factor there. Scope and Devon Travis were my other two choices, and I believe they were splitting, half at home, half on the road. Don't remember where the road was. So I went with the Fenway Park factor there, and that was the week where Pedroia played one game. I think he played two innings and he got hurt and he was put on the DL. So yeah, that didn't work out well for me at all. Scope was somebody I've liked for a while. You know, he's pretty much like anybody in Camden Yards. That ballpark is a bandbox there. So I was certainly, I like Scope. I've got him in a couple of other leagues, didn't take him here. And that may have been my thing as well. I had him in other leagues, didn't have Pedroia in any, so I think I was trying to spread the wealth a little bit here. Either way, backfired, certainly made a mistake there. Kinsler's back anyway, but Scope is the real deal. That power is legit. He's another guy who it'll trail off some. He's not going to hit 50 home runs, but the power is legit. This is not just a guy who's riding a hot streak here. He can hit the ball, can hit the long ball. He's sort of been what Manny Machado hasn't.
Yeah, sure, believe me. I'm a Manny Machado owner. It's really frustrating. The power numbers have been fine, but okay. But the average is just, it's so bad. It's, you know, 80, 90 points where below where we expected it to be at this stage. But you hope for a second and a half turnaround. Guy that you admit that you wouldn't pick up is Jordan Zimmermann, but he's been really hot as of late. And I'll do the last guy, actually. Zach Godley from the Diamondbacks. You said you had a question on Twitter earlier this week. Should you start Godley in Colorado? You thought it was an easy answer, but sure enough, he kind of proved you wrong. He was only gave up 3 runs in 7 innings pitched in Colorado.
Yeah, I don't think he could start in Colorado this week. Well, before, I mean, we don't like starting good pitchers or pitchers that we know about in Colorado, right? We're very hesitant to do that. More or less somebody that doesn't have much of a track record here. But good to see. He pitched in Colorado. He didn't pitch a gem, but he pitched well, you know, especially for a Colorado start here. So, yes, Godley pretty much is a must-start for me from this point on. There may be occasions where I don't start him here, but now instead of looking for an excuse to put him to get him out of my lineup, I'm looking for any excuse to get him in my lineup. Odds are he's a must-start.
Yeah, good stuff. So we'll wrap up this article, taking a look at George's article after this as we head towards the top of the hour number one and towards hour number two. Again, Tony Cicada coming up in that hour number two when we're talking football. Mike and George, Fantasy Sports Radio Network, back after this. Back to wrap up hour number one of the Roto Experts in the morning. Mike Blute and George Kurtz hit George Kurtz. I got too excited there. I blew it coming out of the break. Sorry. Blew it. You get it? So, at Fantasy Sports Radio on Twitter, at FNTSY Radio.
Leave the dumb jokes to me, please.
It's my name. I get to make fun of my own name. That people have said that joke to me a million times. It's not funny anymore, but I get to say it, at least.
Yes, that must have driven you crazy growing up.
Yeah, but it was like burnt out by like the third grade, you know, like everybody, you know, it sort of got a nice shot in the arm when I went to high school. Obviously, you got a new group of people to make fun of it, and football coaches and the coaches were none too happy to get it started again. So in any event, tell you, that's the deal. So hit us up on Twitter at FNTSY Radio. So give us a call, 84-FNTSY. Again, Tony Cicada coming up in the next hour. After that, after our show at 10 o'clock, it is Fantasy Bagels and Baseball with Tony and Cha-Cha. And then it is Al Melchior with FanRag Fantasy Baseball from 12 to 1. And then from 12 to 1, and then 1 to 3, it's the producers with our very own Pete Considori and Chris Pavona. So real quick, a couple of guys that were not hot, but Tulowitzki hits a homer last night, not that it turned his whole season around, and Porcello, George, another guy that you said, I like that he called it the curse of Kate Upton because she blasted the Cy Young voters last year when they selected Porcello over Justin Verlander. Now, Porcello pitched well on Friday night. But in general, his K rate is similar last season, but his walks have been way up, and that's been a part of his struggles, right?
Yeah, we talked about him yesterday. His walks aren't way up, but they're up. Hits are solid. He's given up is also up here. Just not the same pitcher. He actually, when you think about it, is this the pitcher we sort of thought he was? Maybe not quite this bad, but he's. I think we're coming into last year. We thought he was closer to this pitcher than the Cy Young Award winner, right? I mean, that was sort of crazy. Last year seems to be a sell your soul to the devil kind of year. That's the way I look at it. Did not see that coming whatsoever.
I mean, he got a ton of wins last year, right? The numbers were good, but he got a ton of wins last year, a lot of run support, right? I thought it was a good acquisition when the Sox made it. A lot of other people were nonplussed about it or thought it was just an okay acquisition. But I do think you're right, probably closer to this than Cy Young, because I sure as hell didn't expect a Cy Young performance out of him. Tulowitzki hits a homer yesterday, but, you know, look. The guy's hurt all the time. What are you going to do? How is he supposed to get in a groove when he's constantly hurt? But he hit his third homer of the season yesterday, and he doesn't even have 20 RBIs batting in the 220s. So it is what it is with Tulowitzki, right?
Yeah, I think he's done. Done as far as being a truly useful player here. He can't stay on the field. The skills aren't the same when he is on the field. Just not that same player anymore. I doubt that playing on that hard surface in Toronto helps all that much either. So maybe he can be a middle infielder for you, but what are you hoping for here? He's sort of a placeholder now. And I think that's kind of sad for a guy who was once a great player. And
totally
it's not all about being out of course. I mean, playing in Toronto, you know, Rogers, whatever they call it, the Rogers Center, that's one of the best hits ballpark in the American League. The ball flies out of there too. Yet he still can't hit the ball. He's just not the same player. It's sad to see a once great player really lose his skills.
Yeah, we're seeing a couple of guys like that this year. Unfortunately, Tulo is one of those guys. Last guy we'll focus on, and by the way, you can catch George's Who's Not or Who's Not every week. It's released on Fridays on rotoexperts.com. But Eric Thames, who's a guy that's been really great, obviously, from a power perspective, 20 homers. But in the month of June, George, hitting 188.
Yeah, and once again, not surprised here either. Regression was going to happen here. It's adjustments. The league has made adjustments to him. Now Thames needs to make adjustments back. The power, I think, will be there. But I think the average is going to keep taking a hit, not quite to the 188 level, but it's going to continue to take a hit here.
Yeah, hit 345 in April. 221 in May, 188 in June. That is not the trend that you want. We're back to talk football in hour number two on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Join George Kurtz and myself after this.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Roto Experts in the Morning with your hosts, Mike Blewett and George Kurtz. Now, here's Mike and George.
It's hour number two on the Roto Experts in the Morning. The second hour is definitely going to be better than the first hour. If you're a baseball fan, you get a little bit. You get some DFS with Tony Cincotta at 9:40. You can follow him on Twitter at TheTonyCincotta. But we're going to talk a little bit of football, and that's exciting for me, exciting for George, exciting for all of you out there that are maybe getting ready for your earlier fantasy football drafts, or really just trying to pick up some information, pick up some tips along the way. And the Roto Experts Exclusive Edge NFL Draft Package is out. So, you know, that's it's chock full of information. We're going to get into a little bit in the next segment, talk about a couple of, who's some overvalued players we talked about last week. We'll give you some sleepers today and exactly who it is we can evaluate. Maybe take a look at some rookies as well. But, George, do you have any drafts coming up? Do you have any early drafts? I know you typically draft a little bit later in the season. So, what's your setup? Is everything stacked in August, or do you have one super early one where you just got to do best ball and take your best shots?
Well, I prefer to draft as late as possible. I like getting as much information as I possibly can. You know, I don't want to be one of those teams who's drafting somebody who ends up tearing an ACL and whatever in OTAs and training camp, and you lose that play. You lose your second-round pick already. That's frustrating, to put it nicely. But that being said, well, you and I both have a draft in a dynasty league that should happen at some point, right?
Yeah.
Maybe next. It was supposed to start. I think it was supposed to be Thursday. Now they've pushed it back again. So whenever it starts, it starts. So that's one draft. And the Scott Fishbowl will be my next I guess regular league draft, even though it is a super flex league. That I believe it starts July 3rd, if I'm not mistaken. It's a slow draft. So I think it starts July 3rd. I'm not 100% sure. What pick you got in the first round there?
I don't know. I got to check. I have to log in there. I got to log in there. I feel like maybe it's fifth or sixth, but that's good. Maybe I'll check that during the break. I got to get on that. I've been getting some communication there, but I didn't realize that, it's upon us. I mean, July 3rd is really basically next week. So, we'll be on it. We'll certainly be in the mix there. I got to find out exactly who's in my league. I don't think it was totally filled out last time I went on there. So, I guess that answers our question. George and I will be doing drafts starting next week. Our Dynasty League draft, that's rookies only because we're keeping 40 players and we got five on the taxi squad. Your boy, Jalen Smith, is going to come off my taxi squad, George. Cowboys linebacker they drafted in the second round with that significant knee injury. He has been out there practicing, so it looks like he might get some use this year.
He might. He still has the drop foot. That's not completely healed. He does have the nerve firing somewhat. So I think he's one of the – I think if you're a football fan in general, you're curious to see what he can do. Can he come back? You know, what level can he come back at? You know, and he would have been a top five pick if he didn't wreck the knee in college. What is he going to be at now in the NFL? What can he do? Can he go side to side? I'm as curious as anybody else, Mike.
Yeah, total freak injury. And I'm rooting for him. I have him on my team. So we'll come back. We'll talk some football. Mike and George on the Roto Experts in the Morning talking fantasy football. I know you're excited. Come join us after the break. There it is. Little Bob O'Reilly, George. Get the Sunday morning started. Get the juices flowing. The Paul O'Neill walk-up song, but famous in many movies. And if you're a Who fan, which George is, and you know the song quite well, out here in the streets. So, we're going to talk some football. First of all, why did the Chiefs thing is weird, right? I mean, I get Andy Reid extension, but there didn't seem to be any issues, really. They even talked extension with John Dorsey, and then, boom, out of nowhere, GM fired right in between OTAs and training camp. It was an odd timing, don't you think?
Yeah, to put it nicely. I think that was awfully strange. So, yes, I was caught off guard a little bit there that this happened. Why? I guess we'll never know. I was a little surprised that Andy Reid signed the extension, too. It was his man. So I guess he had to be on board here, right? I don't think they would have done it without Reed's permission, or without Reed's okay, I should say. So strange. Like I said, very strange, but it is what it is. We've seen a lot of strange. We see this all throughout sports now. People get fired pretty much at any time. You know, it makes you wonder what happened here. Because it's after the draft, after OTAs, after free agency for pretty much. What happened here that made them move in this direction? Because generally you want to make this move before all this. Right, you want your guy. If you don't trust them, you don't want them making all these moves. So strange, absolutely strange.
And it'd be really hard to bring in an external candidate unless he's not already part of their family, right? Chris Ballard was their number two personnel guy. He's now running the Colts. John Dorsey now moves out, so they didn't. The guy that would have taken that job internally is working somewhere else already, and isn't going to give up that job, obviously. So, they talked extension from what I understand earlier, didn't get to it. And then it looks like things kind of broke down a little bit. I don't know that. I don't think the Pat Mahomes trade, I don't think that's a part of it. I think that had to be a sign off from a lot of different people. I heard the Jeremy Maclin thing and I haven't heard the details of it, but I heard very quickly on a different show that Jeremy Maclin was told about his release over voicemail. That's not the way you want to do things, obviously. It does surprise me that somebody with that level of experience would do something like that. I think you just make every single effort to talk to the guy and don't say anything to the press until you do. Leaks can happen, but if it's not on you, the leak, then you can blame somebody else and say that's not the way we do things. So Look, I don't think that's the reason that he got released. There had to be some other things there, and maybe he was asking for a little bit too much money, honestly, in through this extension. That always follow the money, right? And it can be the answer to a lot of different things, George, when it comes to confounding situations like this.
Yeah, I mean, well, we may never know the full story of what really happened here, why everything went sort of haywire here. Now, when it comes to the voicemail thing, for all we know, they've been trying to get in touch with Mac, and he was away on vacation. They couldn't get in touch. They just left it. You know, he got frustration, whatever. But it's not the right way to go about things.
Call his agent.
Yeah, right? That's going to be the easiest thing. There's going to be somebody you can go, you can talk to.
His agent is – those guys pick up the calls from the agent. They don't talk to anybody else. You know, maybe he's in Europe. Maybe he doesn't want to be disturbed. The agent – knows how to get in touch with the guy. It's the most important guy in his professional career. So I'm sure he could have gotten in touch with him in that respect. So anyway, Chiefs are moving on. We still expect good things out of them. No Jeremy Maclin. By the way, you know, as it happens here, news breaks at certain times of the week, and we don't really get a chance to talk about it. I'm sure you've beaten the Maclin thing into the ground on other shows, but I am surprised that they were able to find the money for it, but good for them. It is a good fit. We talked about it as a football fit. Really good fit there. I was just surprised they were able to make the money work.
Yes. Yeah, they were in for a look. They were looking at Decker for a while, too. I guess someone like this ilk comes on the free agency, why all of a sudden, unexpected. We sort of saw this last year with Josh Norman, too. It does happen. You know, you find – listen, any team can find the money. If they really want to, they can restructure contracts. They can find the money. So I'm not totally shocked here. I just don't – fantasy-wise, I don't like all of a sudden a skill player going to a new team, has to learn the offense, all the route trees, has to get chemistry with the quarterback. And I don't trust Flacco as a fantasy quarterback in the first place. You know, this is a team that's sort of, you know, I think they were 31-33 over the last 64 games. So it's not like it's like a great team anyway. Dixon suspended for the first four games. I don't know. Things just seem to be a little wacky here for me. I haven't seen wide receiver four.
Do you like Maclin or Decker better as the two guys that landed places recently?
Decker in Tennessee. You got Rashad Matthews, Delonte Walker, the rookie Corey Davis, Mariota. We think he's going to be good, but not quite sure. But I think it's going to be a good team. I'll go out and let them say they're going to win that division. So I'll jinx them this year. Took care of Jacksonville last year. I'll take care of Tennessee this year.
Yeah, you are the...
That's right.
You are the grim reaper for the AFC South champs.
Yeah, if you're a Tennessee Titan fan, you do not want me picking them to
win
that.
That's the KOD right there.
As far as Maclin, Flacco, Mike Wallace, really nobody else there. You would think Maclin should have more opportunities. Yeah, I don't trust Brett Perryman whatsoever, so I'm not worried about him. But I
Brashad. Brett's his dad.
I'm still, you know, it's funny. I'm still leaning towards Decker, but I'm going to go with Maclin just for the opportunity. He's the number two guy, right? Pitt is not there anymore either. So I'll go Maclin barely over Decker. I do like the Tennessee team better, though.
I'm with you. And I actually like, from an NFL standpoint, I think I like the Decker move a lot. But from a fantasy perspective, I'll have to take Maclin over Decker. There's just going to be more opportunities there, I would suspect. I don't think Decker going to – by the way, wide receivers switching teams is not always, as George said, wide receivers switching teams, especially when these guys switch teams, isn't always a recipe for success. If you look historically at the NFL, and certainly from a fantasy standpoint, there's very few guys that move around to different teams at the wide receiver position and have big success at their next landing spots. Brandon Marshall, don't bring him up because he's more the exception to the rule than he is. You know, we've seen other guys. Mike Wallace has bounced around a little bit. You could argue that he's never been as good as he was in Pittsburgh and other guys as well. So we'll see. Hopefully, you know, Maclin was obviously good, and Decker was obviously good when they changed, but can they change a second time teams and be successful? We shall see. So, article I wanted to focus on, and kudos to Bobby McMahon, an award-winning writer in his own right. Bobby McMahon wrote for the exclusive Edge NFL Draft Package, breakout players for the 2017 fantasy football season. He takes a look at a few guys, and I'm going to bounce around a little bit, see what George thinks. Now, I think a lot of people are on board, and certainly on draft night, I remember tweeting out, I don't think there's anybody that benefited more in fantasy at the quarterback position from draft night than did Jameis Winston. And from this offseason, he picked up DeSean Jackson. Chris Godwin gets drafted. O.J. Howard gets drafted. So Jameis Winston, He's a back-to-back 4,000-yard season quarterback with at least 28 touchdowns in each of those years. And Bobby has him as a breakout quarterback. I think he's going to play even better, take his game to the next level, maybe 4,500 yards and 30-plus scores. You're in or you're out on that assessment.
Everybody's in on that assessment. All right, this is nobody's breaking news here. I think most of us, I don't want to say everybody, but most of us are in on Jameis Winston having a big season. He has all the weapons, and the running game is, we don't know. That's sort of a recipe for success for the quarterback, right? I mean, you think about it. The offensive line's good, not great, but good. You have Mike Evans. For me, no worse than the number four overall receiver in fantasy. You can make it obvious he's number two or number three. But that's, for me, he's no worse than number four. You got the Deshaun Jackson to spread, keep those safeties deep. You know, so you got the deep guy there who can blow the top off defenses. You have two very good tight ends. I'm curious to see how they integrate this with O.J. Howard and Cameron Brate. Really curious to see how they do this. And then the running game, all right, I don't know what we're thinking. Martin's out for our first four games. Jaquizz Rodgers will take over. I think it's at least average, you know, and I like that. So I don't want it to be great. You don't want it to be fantastic because it's fantastic, then they're going to run the ball more. I think they will throw the ball some. The defense is also maybe a tick above average, but they should play some high-scoring games here. So I'm absolutely in on most of the Tampa Bay passing game.
Yeah, one guy quick before the break, Dante Moncrief, a disappointment last year. He missed a lot of time. Had seven touchdowns, but only 30 catches and 307 yards. So he was basically a zero unless you're playing some DFS on the right weeks. But he missed a lot of time. People expected him to have a really nice season last year. Didn't happen. Are you in on Dante Moncrief for this year? He scored a touchdown in seven of the nine games in which he played.
Yeah, I was one of those people who was in on him last year. Seeing him get hurt with the shoulder injury in week two was, I don't want to say devastating, but it was disappointing. And then he was never really the same after that, outside of catching the touchdowns, which sort of saved his season. All right, so you need more than that. You need more than 30 catches. Got to do better than that. I won't be as in on him this year because we don't know about Andrew Luck yet. I'm getting way too afraid of what's going on here with his shoulder as well, that he may not be ready for training camp. This seems to keep getting worse and worse. I think he's healthy by the regular season, but I'm not 100% sure now. So I still like Moncrief, but a lot of his how much I like will depend on Andrew Luck. And right now, if I'm drafting today or I'm drafting next week in Scott Fishbowl, I'm probably staying away from both.
And why do people like T.Y. Hilton so much?
Well, because we're assuming Luck is going to be healthy. And I do think Luck will be healthy. But right now, once again, this is going to be at that point with draft. Late first round, second round with Hilton, there'll be other places I can go that are safer.
Yeah. Great. Keep talking about this article. As I try to get my breath back, we'll talk about this article more after the break. It's Mike and George on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Man, we really ramped it up here. Bob O'Reilly, that was not in my wheelhouse, whatever that was. But, you know, he's trying to get it going. People are on their way to
I didn't know what that
people
was.
People are on their way to church. People are on their way to church, listening to some fantasy sports. Pete's got to get it going. He's got to get the juices flowing. You got to get fired up on your way to service this morning.
You know, when I had to, back a couple of years ago, when I had to go to church for a couple of things, you know, communions and baptisms like that, I used to listen to you in Cincata.
That's funny. On Sundays or Saturdays?
Sundays.
Well, you were doing Saturdays, yeah.
Saturdays with you and I, Saturdays. Yeah. I'd be listening to you. Hey, was that entertaining? I'd be laughing. I think my wife probably wanted to strangle me, but there's no way I could sit through a church service and just.
It was just me ducking landmines that Tony lays out there for you, trying to get you to say something off color or to swear or to step in something. That's usually the tenor of that show, which was a lot of fun. But he has a lot of fun making people uncomfortable and trying to get us around it.
So. I learned from Tony. I learned about Tony early on. If you don't want it on air, don't tell him.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Whatever he finds out is fair game, and he's going to needle you with it. And he does want to make you uncomfortable.
And then it's on for the next week. He'll mention it on other shows. It's just more content for him, so I can appreciate that as a radio host myself. So, in any event, moving on down this list from Bobby McMahon, again, you can go to the rotoexperts.com exclusive edge draft package now. You're going to find tons of great stuff. This article I'm highlighting a few pieces of it to give people an idea of the type of content that's in there. You can find breakout players. George has his standard and PPR rankings in there, as does Jake Seeley. In fact, you know, I remember reading a tweet earlier this week how Matt Modica had a draft. It was like best ball format. And Jake hates that stuff. He just hates that you would have to go so early in the season because it amounts to too much luck. You don't have enough data there yet to figure out what's going to happen, or information to understand what's going to happen. So similar to you, Jake really likes to wait and get some more information before he starts drafting.
Yeah, I get the point with Jake. I think he's right. I mean, I don't like drafting early either, because I think then luck becomes a part of it. Like I said, there will be, if you let's say you're drafting tomorrow. Let's say you're drafting today. You know, there will be maybe two teams that lose a significant player, and it puts you behind the eight ball, and we're not even close to week one. You know, so it can be frustrating, and I like to take luck out of it. I like to think I'm a skilled enough player where I don't want luck to play a part in it. You know, I want to have it where it's more skilled, more thinking about it. It's why I like to play a bigger rosters. You know, draft the more players as possible, more starters. You know, I much prefer a super flex or a two quarterback league because I want more. I just want more people to think. I don't want in any fantasy sport when you can go up, just draft this position in the last round, then something's wrong in my mind. It shouldn't be that easy where you just say, hey, draft the defense last round. Get rid of defenses then, or make them better. Go to IDP. Get rid of kickers, period. A quarterback, same thing. I'll say it over and over again. In most leagues, I'm going to wait until round 10, 11 to draft the quarterback. That's not good for the game. It shouldn't be that way. I think, once again, you should move on. Make the league harder. Make it more competitive. So start two quarterbacks. Hey, I can make an argument to start two tight ends, too.
Agreed. I think you could make that argument. And I would say a year ago, to George's point about players losing significant players, a year ago, the Vikings had a quarterback, and Carson Wentz was possibly going to be a backup, and people were talking about how well Sam Bradford played in the last 7 to 9 games of the 2015 season with the Eagles. And then fast forward to late August, Bridgewater's done, Bradford gets traded, and we have two new quarterbacks, basically, in two new situations. Minnesota, we saw the struggles that they had, and Philly, we saw, you know, kind of an up and down season. I think that's the one guy, you know, I'm really at the quarterback position. I'm really curious to see how Wentz plays out this year, because I think people got very excited about him because the Eagles got off to a good start and he played well. But the second half of his season was very much a rookie type season where he's throwing checkdowns basically for the second half of the season. It wasn't a very dynamic offense. So hopefully he will continue to build on that. Honestly, you could say the exact same thing about Derek Carr a couple of years ago as well. So I'm not being overly critical of Wentz. It's just the way that rookie seasons tend to pan out.
Agreed. I think we were spoiled. You know, years ago, Roethlisberger and Ryan came out and played well right away. Russell Wilson played well right away. Dak Prescott last year played well right away. That's more, you know, that's not the norm. You know, generally, rookie quarterbacks are going to struggle. What Wentz did last year is actually kind of normal. Played well at the beginning. Teams made adjustments. He didn't. Didn't help him any that the running game was so-so. Offensive line wasn't very good either. So he had some things going against him there. I think Wentz is going to be a very good NFL quarterback. Fantasy-wise, one quarterback start league, I don't want him. I have him looking at my rankings at 19. You know, quarterback is extremely deep. I know 19 sounds low, but I can't find a quarterback to put him ahead of. Maybe you want to put him ahead of Andy Dalton? Fine, I'm okay with that. But who am I taking out of my top 18? The guys up before him, Taylor, Prescott, Rivers, Roethlisberger, Manning, Stafford, Carr. Who am I putting Carson Wentz ahead of?
You can't really move him up that much based on what they did last year. I can't just wildly predict a breakout season. I like the pieces he has around him, and I trust Doug Peterson. I like the fact that, look, I think a really important part from an NFL standpoint of developing quarterback is making sure you have a guy in the building that knows what he's doing, and Doug Peterson does. He happens to be the head coach. There's plenty of other – like Jared Goff was in a wasteland last year. And he might not be any better this year than he was a year ago. And it might be through no fault of his own. He's a relatively inexperienced quarterback. And he's got now a new coaching staff. And hopefully McVay can help him out. But I like the fact that Wentz is working with Peterson. I think that helps him enormously in his development.
Yes. Quarterback, there's so much that goes into development. You know, obviously, you want to have the weapons around you. You want to make sure the offensive line's good. He needs that. that trust the receiver, generally a tight end, where you can get the ball too quickly. So much goes into it that they need time. I mean, once again, Mike, you and I are of the age where we remember back in the 70s, 80s, even the 90s, quarterbacks didn't play right away out of college. They sat. Oh. You know, that's how they learned, sit behind the starter, generally. There are some, of course, there are always exceptions to the rule, but that's how it was. Nowadays, we have no patience. You know, you're dreading, you got to play right away. We only got you for 4 years where that contract really gets up there. And so you got to play now. Go, go, go. And generally, for the most part, it seems that the teams that have these good young quarterbacks suck anyway. So they can afford to give up a year or two for growing pains. Not that I think Carson Wentz will be that. I think this team will be somewhat competitive this year.
So here's just to illustrate my point a little bit further before I get back to Bobby's article, if we can even do it, if I stop flapping my gums. So last year, his average yard per attempt, Wentz, by year's end was 5.7. It's really low relative to the other quarterbacks in the league last year. Derek Carr, in the 2014 season, 5.3. It was one of the lowest in history for a guy that started 16 games. Fast forward 1 year to 2015, it's 7.1. Last year, 7.5. He goes 12-3. He's now getting paid $125 million. So I'm not saying Carson Wentz is Derek Carr, but I'm saying it's possible. I'm just saying don't get excited that he's a superstar already. And I'm the counterpoint I gave you to that, I'm not suggesting that he stinks. So, you know, somewhere in the middle, like George said, he's probably not going to break top 15. And that doesn't mean he's a bad QB. So just keep that in mind for your two QBs, because if you're drafting him in a one QB league, you probably live in the greater Philadelphia metropolitan area. So Hunter Henry, the next guy on Bobby McMahon's list, has the talent of a top five fantasy tight end. I've said it many times. I'm not the only one saying it. San Diego has the looks to me of New Orleans West. So what do you think? Hunter Henry, is he the breakout star this year? Does he take over the mantle completely from Antonio Gates after he finally gets this touchdown record?
I'd feel much better if Gates wasn't there. Right now he is, yeah. And that's Rogers. That's Rivers' security blanket. You know, I like Hunter Henry a lot, especially in the red zone. Rivers does seem to look for him there. He's a big target, knows how to get open, knows how to find space in the red zone, which is important. But Gates is still there. You know, he's going to catch some balls. He's going to get that touchdown. He's going to steal some touchdowns away. I have Hunter Henry at number 12. Now, if Gates wasn't there, I'd probably have him at number 7. No, that's I'd move up significantly as well. I don't think I can put him top five yet. Gronk, Kelsey, Reed, Olsen, Graham, Delaney Walker, guys I'd still have above him. Although he'd be really close with Graham and Walker. I can see the argument for him being at five. I can certainly see it here because I think he's right. I think San Diego is going to play some high-scoring games here. I think Rivers is going to – that's an interesting San Diego team. You're playing in a high school stadium pretty much, so that's weird. You know, right? Is it only I don't know how they're going to adjust to that for the next 3 years. So that's going to be strange here. But bottom line is, Mike, yes, I'm on board with Henry as well, but it's hard for me to completely trust him this year. I won't take him until double-digit rounds. It'll be late if someone else – you know, if I'm in the league with Mike Blewett grabs Hunter Henry, I'm not crying because I think there is some problems here with Gates being there, but I wouldn't mind him having on my team either. But here's the other thing. If I have Henry on my team, it almost certainly means I'm drafting another tight end.
George, they were playing in an empty Qualcomm stadium. They're going to move to this StubHub Center, which I think is 34,000. Some Texas high school football stadiums are that big. But what if it's full in L.A. at 34,000? That might be kind of nice for them to have a full, loud stadium. I don't know how many people will make the trip up from San Diego for that game, but, you know, it might be a nice
little change.
Will it
be professional level of a stadium? I mean, I don't know.
It's a professional soccer stadium. Like, it's not some chump stadium. I mean, it's relatively new building.
I don't know. Plus, I don't know if L.A. is coming out to welcome the charge with open arms.
That I don't know. I agree with you. That's
I'm curious.
Spot.
I'm very curious about this.
They didn't show up for the Rams.
Strange situation.
They didn't show up for the Rams. I wouldn't show up for the Rams either.
Show up for the Rams.
Yeah, that's a good point. Last guy, real quick, Paul Perkins. You're in or you're out?
If I go zero running back strategy, I'm in because I think he's a guy who could break out. If you're asking me, am I going to rely on him? No. I mean, I think that's crazy. But in a zero running back strategy, you look at a draft for 5-6 running backs hoping to hit. I think he's one of those guys who may hit. Perkins and Perrine are somebody I'm looking at in a zero running back strategy.
Bobby really likes him. 1,000 yards, he says. 5 to 8 touchdowns.
Bobby's smoking the good stuff.
I don't see that. We'll be back with Tony Cicada after the break. Mike and George on the Roto Experts. back on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Should have Tony Cicada coming up here in a few minutes. He'll join us. Talk about whatever he wants to talk about, frankly. Might do some MLB DFS. Maybe some golf. Got a big golf tournament going on right now. Thanks, George. The Travelers Championship going on right now. Jordan Spieth in the lead with Boo Weekly on his heels. So we'll see exactly.
Are you a golfer, Mike?
No. I golfed once last year. It was the first time I had been out there in probably more than a decade. I do like it. I don't really have time for it. I don't really understand how people do have time for it. I get if you're a doctor and you like, you can cut out, or if you take clients out there to do it. But for the guy that has smaller children like us that like ditches the family all day on a Saturday and Sunday, I sort of don't get it. I don't know how the passes a muster. It wouldn't with my wife personally.
I love golfing. I don't go on weekends.
I love it too. Yeah.
I go during the week. Weekends, it's just too crowded. But golfing's fun. I mean, I've been going with my brother and a friend of ours for, I don't know, 25 years. And it's the most frustrating sport there is because I don't play enough to be good. I'm better than your average golfer. I'm probably a 20-25 handicap. But you can't get good. Yeah, I can play the game. But it's unless you play it every day, you can't really get very good at it. And there are days where I've never broken a club over my knee or anything like that, but I have thrown one in a tree after a frustrating, and it didn't come down, so I lost my 5 wood. obviously, I did not hit the best of shots, and it's a humbling game. You'll hit a great shot, and then also the next three are horrible, and there are some golf courses. There's nothing more annoying than hitting what you think is a good shot, or maybe off the tee or on your second shot, and then you can't find the ball, even though it's in the middle of the fairway. And I've had that happen numerous times. It's like, where the hell did a gopher come and eat my ball? I mean, really, what's going on here? And it's a lot of fun to be out. If you get the right people, the right foursome to go out with, it's a lot of fun.
I agree. So last year when I did that, it was like July 4th weekend last year. I was out with my father-in-law, whom I have a really good relationship with, my brother-in-law, and a friend. And we had a great time. There's no pressure on me, right? Because I hadn't golfed in so long. I was just going out there to have fun. It was a good foursome. We had a lot of fun. And I can see myself doing more of it. I played, you know, this is the irony. I actually played a lot when I was younger, like when I was a teenager and stuff, and stupidly just let it go by the wayside and just didn't keep up on it. So maybe I pick it up again now. I'll never be great unless I have this opportunity to go middle of the week like you. I think that's the best way to do it. So I do appreciate it. I watch golf, so that's the irony. You know, I've watched golf over the years and I don't play much of it, but I'll look forward to playing a couple of times this summer. Yeah, I'll look forward to playing a couple of times this summer. So we'll keep going back to Bobby's article. He has Willie Snead in there. We talked about him a bunch yesterday. He's got some guys here that I'm getting a little nervous here about everybody talking about Devontae Parker again. Like when I just start to hear everybody talking about a certain player, I like him a lot. A few years ago when Devontae Parker got drafted, I thought he was going to be either the best or the second best wide receiver in that draft behind Amari Cooper. And I liked Parker's ceiling a ton. I just don't know if it's going to happen this year. And with Jarvis Landry catching, by the way, here's a trivia question for you. Odell Beckham, I believe, has 288 catches through the first 3 years of his career. It's an NFL record. But he's tied with somebody. Who's that person that he's tied with?
I love these random things that are records.
Yeah, just,
the first 3 years. They'll just pick this out of a hat. Oh, the first 3 years, first 4 years, first 5 years. I mean, come on. Who the hell cares?
It's Jarvis Landry. That's why. It's relevant. Jarvis Landry tied his record. They're actually
I knew it wasn't Devontae Parker.
Yeah, they're actually best of friends, and they have this NFL record. I took a screenshot of something the other day, so I saw that. But in any event, Jarvis Landry's there taking up so many balls. I don't know that Ryan Tannehill can be the guy to make Devontae Parker ascend to the next level. Can he get to a better level than where he is now? Yes. But to call it a breakout season, I'd want the definition of that. Does that make sense?
Well, I guess a breakout season would be his best season to date, which isn't asking for much.
Right.
Right. So you do need, you're right. This is where we're, it's always lies, damn lies, statistics. What's your definition of breakout? You know, technically a breakout would be just your best season to date, but that's really not a breakout. Parker hasn't done anything. You know, so a breakout wouldn't be much of anything for him.
Yeah. Last year, 56 for 744 and four touchdowns. You want to tell me he's going to have a better season than that this year? Well, I hope so, because that's nothing. So are we going to get 90? Yeah, that's a breakout.
Yeah, I think
I don't know that he hits that.
Off those numbers that you just mentioned from last year, I would think he has to go 75,000. Touchdowns to me are finicky, so I don't really, I don't think it's fair to judge him on that. But I think 75,000 would have to be his breakout over last year. I think when you look at the Miami Dolphin offense, Mike, it's somewhat intriguing. Right? The offensive line, still shaky. It's not terrible, certainly not good.
But it got better. It did get better this offseason.
It did, but they lost Brandon Albert too, so it's got issues. You don't know if Tonto can handle a left tackle. We don't know. That's what he's drafted for, and he fell into the Dolphins' lap because of the that stupid picture that was on his social media. But we don't know there. They got Jay Ajayi. He seems to be the real deal, although we keep pointing it out. I know I keep doing it. As far as fantasy was, he had, three big games last year. That propelled his whole fantasy season was three big games, the two against Buffalo and Pittsburgh, where I think an overwhelming majority of his fantasy points came from. So can he do it on a consistent basis? I do like the passing game as far as the weapons. You mentioned Landry, he catches everything. Not a threat in the red zone, but he catches all the passes here. Dynamite in PPR leagues. Kenny Stills, he caught all the deep touchdowns last year. Dropped a few too, but actually he was a threat there. Takes away that safety off the line of scrimmage. Parker could be the key here. Can he make this jump to being the receiver we thought he could be? We're not talking A.J. Green, Odell Beckham type, but can he be a legit threat here all the time? Julius Thomas, in my mind, is also a big part here. We've seen Tannehill in the past when he had Charles Clay. Love to throw to a tight end in the red zone. Likes that big target here. Now, Thomas has had big seasons with Adam Gase before. Can he do it again? Right now, we're hearing that the chemistry is off between these two. And that, this is something that scares me. It's only June. They have plenty of time to work on it. As Matt Modica said in the promo, these guys should probably become best friends and get together as early and often as possible to get that chemistry down. But we also saw last year with Drew Brees, Hall of Fame quarterback, that he was never on the same page with Kobe Fleener. And we're hoping that sort of pays off this year. So, that always scares me a little bit, Mike, when I hear the chemistry is not there. Because you just wonder if Tannehill goes, I'll just go in a different direction.
What's funny is, we heard that last year, and there was a lot of hemming and hawing about the Brees-Fleener thing, and it's probably overblown, not a big deal. It wasn't. It wasn't overblown. They weren't on the same page. And Fleener, ironically, ends up having the season was pretty terrible, but the tight end position was such a mess. I think Fleener still ranked in the top 13 or 14 tight ends, so he was somebody that got used a lot in fantasy football last year. But it wasn't overblown. They really weren't on the same page for most of the year, and Brees just went elsewhere, Michael Thomas and whoever else you want to mention.
Yeah, I think, and we're going to go tight now going to the Saints, but I think Fleener actually could be a key to that offense somewhat because they don't have Cooks anymore. Thomas is going to get a lot of coverage. As much as I like Snead, he is more suited to be a slot receiver than a true outside wide receiver, so that could be a problem there. Fleener could help make that offense go, and then, of course, we can go into the running back situation, which in my mind is maybe one of the most curious in the NFL.
I agree. It's funny. I just remember back when we had on the Colts beat writer last year, George, we had on, and she took apart Kobe Fleener. She was never happier to see a player go to New Orleans than him. Last year in New Orleans, he 50 catches, 631 yards, and three touchdowns. Only scored one touchdown in the second half of the season. But I just remember that. It sticks in my craw that she had such negative things to say about it, how he would drop balls and fumble and all that kind of stuff. But
didn't we have a beat reporter from every team in the South? They all hated their team.
Yes. None of them picked a team to win. They all thought they were going to stink again, including the Texans reporter. So it was odd that we had all four of them on from that division, and they all still thought that the division would stink, and it was a lot better.
Yeah, I found that funny. All of them thought their teams had major problems, which for the most part, most did. But that was kind of funny. And, usually it's the exact opposite. Their teams are great. They're going to win, blah, blah, blah. Not so much the case last year. Well, Jacksonville was right.
Yeah, so Tony Cicada actually joins us. And, Tony, do you think the AFC South is pointing forward like it was last year, or is it going to stink?
Well, they're going to be better than last year because the division was the worst that you've ever seen. But I think basically you're going to have one team maybe over 500 and win division.
Who?
Really?
I don't know who, but I would guess it's going to be Houston.
Tennessee.
You know, Tennessee is very intriguing. I've been looking over the numbers, of course, as we all have. Going over. From weeks 5 to weeks 12, do you know Marcus Mariota had the most points in fantasy football?
That's crazy.
I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
You know, Tony, I know you're a Patriots fan, so it's probably not fair to ask you. But as a football fan overall, I mean, is it fair what the Patriots are doing? I mean, they're going to win. I'd be shocked if they don't get at least a championship game again. Is that good for the game? Is it any fun knowing how good New England's going to be year after year after
year? This is a great question. Because, like, the Golden State thing, like, they won, and I remember tweeting out, right? I'm sitting there, they win the championship, and I'm right. I just watched Golden State win, and I feel like I got to throw up a little watching this thing. But I don't feel the same way against New England. I don't think it's because I'm a fan. I think the whole thing is, like, maybe the only comparison was when they brought in Randy Moss that it wasn't fair and he had those off years there. But they just find a way to do it every year, and I think everybody in the world wants to beat him. So I don't know. I don't know. I don't have the answer to that, actually.
Well, they keep scouting NFL players while everybody's scouting college players, and they just acquire guys that they already know have talent. David Harris, Tony Ealy, the whole Brandon Cooks, the whole thing. Tony, come back after break and join us, too.
Yeah, I'm going to give you a Martellus Bennett update, who really huge, huge props for him.
Yeah, we'll come back after the break. Tony will tell us about Martellus Bennett as we close out the show on the Roto Experts in the Morning. Back to close out the show. Thanks for listening this morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. This has been the Roto Experts, and we're going to hand it off to Fantasy Bagels and Baseball in just a minute with Tony Sincotta and Cha-Cha. Then it's FanRag Fantasy Baseball with Al Melchior, and after that, the producers with Pete Considori and Chris Pavona. So, Tony, before the break, we were talking about this Patriots. You know, they've just figured out a different way to do it. They look at the metrics and they pick up Gillis Lee and Rex Burkhead to improve upon their running game from Blunt. And then they just scout a bunch of NFL players as opposed to flipping coins and figuring out which college player is supposed to be better. So now they got Brandon Hooks and Coney Ealy and on and on and on. They pick up David Harris from the Jets just to fill in on first and second down. So you're saying that Martellus Bennett, who was a Patriot last year, you have a good update on him.
Yeah, so Bennett, he's playing in Green Bay now, and they ask him, you know, who's the better quarterback, Rodgers or Brady? He goes, well, of course, I play for Green Bay now, so it's Aaron Rodgers. So he throws it out there like that, and he says, but the one thing with Tom Brady is he made me a better player. Like, when you go to New England, they teach you, like, you run a certain pattern, 17 yards, he'll stop the practice if I turn my head the wrong way. He goes, never had that in the wrong ever before. And everything's down to the finest detail there. And so you realize why players go there and appreciate it. And he was talking about how he's left New England and he's become a better player just by spending 1 year there.
It's incredible what New England does there. You know, Tony, get back to the question before the break. I think the NFL needs a New England because every great movie needs a villain, right? And the Patriots are the villain. You know, whether it's the Flake Gate, Spy Gate, Gates of Heaven, whatever we want to go with, that's what everybody roots against them. We all want to watch them. You know, so I think it's a good thing for the NFL to have a great team, something we generally don't see in this era of sports all that much because of the salary cap and everybody wanting parity in all these sports.
Yeah, I mean, what the Patriots are doing, you shouldn't be able to do with the salary cap and the draft, the way everything's set up. Good franchise. And that should be a lesson to all the NFL teams, but it isn't. You look at Pittsburgh, you look at the New England Patriots, same owner, same coach all these years, and just don't keep changing everything.
I mean, it's the 5 Super Bowls, but even the 2 that they lost, all of those Super Bowls were just so tight. You know, they could have been in another Super Bowl in 06 if they spent any money on a wide receiver. They could have closed out the Colts back then, too. So they're as good as they are, and as much as they'll rip off 13 or 14 wins this year. By the way, if I put it at 13.5, would you take the over, Tony?
This year, yeah, I really do. It seems like to me that this year they're really putting everything together. I think there's a chance that it's Tom Brady's last season, and they're going after it.
I agree, actually, with Garoppolo staying there. I think something is up there. So I think you're right. I want the over-under at 12.5. I think 13.5 is a little rough. but I think the Patriots, like I said, I think their next important game is the AFC Championship game.
George, this was my conspiracy theory, and you crapped on it a couple of months ago, and now
I'm on board.
Done after
things
this
change in fantasy.
Finally,
Mike.
I'm not Tony. I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I think I had something there with Brady stepping down this year.
I think once Giselle came out with that whole thing on TV, it definitely put some weight to it.
Who's more famous, Giselle or Tom Brady?
I think Giselle.
Really? Because I would have never even heard of her outside of being married to Tom Brady.
Well, worldwide, right? I think a lot of guys like girls scantily clad. Just my opinion. Yeah.
Wow, that's breaking
news. Really
breaking.
Yes. Tony, really, really digging deep on that. It's a sleeper of a call right there. Guys like scantily clad women. So, all right. So you got to have something good with Cha-Cha today for the next 2 hours. You got any good polls that people should pay attention to?
We've got a segment where fantasy baseball players are doing well, but can they keep it up? So it's, are they a fantasy darling or are you going to be taking it in the rear?
Oh, nice. That's good stuff. It's a way to close out the show on a Sunday morning. Tony Sakata and Cha-Cha up next with Fantasy Baseball. George and I will be back next Saturday. Thanks for listening.